I'm holding a copy of today's St. Paul paper in front of me. It says, "A Nation Waits" on the front. And we've got pictures of George W. and Al Gore. And it talks about the wait for the Florida elections to come out. How do you feel about this whole fiasco?
I think it's very exciting. But it's very difficult for these two men, my goodness. And for it to have happened the way it did in the middle of the night, going this way, going that way, I hope it will be settled soon. If they have to wait until all of the overseas absentee votes come in, it's going to be quite a drag.
Oh, definitely. You will be glad to know that Minnesota will not be sending Rod Grams back to D.C.
Say again, was that a question?
No, just a statement, really. I'm sorry.
You're not very loud.
Oh, I'm going to pump the volume up as much as I can.
Yes, and speak right into the receiver.
Okay, how's this?
That's fine. That's fine.
Okay.
You don't very often have to deal with a person as old and as deaf as I am.
If you don't mind my asking, how old are you?
I am 90. Isn't that awful?
That's amazing, considering your walk across the country.
I know. I'm just a strange person, that's all. I don't know how it happened, but I seem to be very happy doing it. My emphysema was much better by the time I got home, and my arthritis seemed to be much better. It was a healthful thing to do.
And very refreshing, too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I saw you speak at the Nader Super Rally in Minneapolis.
Were you there?
Yes, I was.
When I was speaking there?
Mm-hmm.
That was quite exciting, wasn't it?
Yes, I could not believe the reaction from the crowd.
He asked me to come two more times, but I was walking across Missouri for Proposition B, which unfortunately did not pass. And then I went on from there to Oregon, and I was there three or four days. And that didn't pass, so I was not very successful. I just hope that, because it's very sad, because they, in both places, they spent at least $1 million on advertising. So all you can say is that it is training people to think about campaign finance reform, and we just hope that the four states that have it will be very successful this time, and people will say, that's a good thing.
Sounds like it will be at least a moderate success. Now, speaking of your walks, your most famous one is, of course, the walk you did from coast to coast in support of finance reform.
Yes.
What prompted the walk, and have your goals come to fruition for you?
Well, I walked because I feel very strongly that our country has given over our elections to the big money interests. And I feel that campaign finance reform or public financing is the only way to go. And I do think that I stirred up enough interest, and that was what I had hoped to do. I said I am walking across the country to create a wave of interest in campaign finance reform, public financing. And I do think there's more talk about it now. There's a great deal of educating to be done.
I saw at one point during the walk you had commented that you felt it was obscene that George W. Bush had raised $36.3 million for his White House run. What would you call it now that he's raised $184 million?
Well, it was an awful lot of money, and I think that is one thing that the people understand when you say, well, I was trying to get rid of some of the illegal money that we're using, because you know there are laws on the books that have been there. In 1907, Theodore Roosevelt was able to get a law passed saying that no corporate money should be allowed in our politics. And the same thing was done for unions in 1947. And it's just that they are not enforcing those laws. I mean, it's almost as if Janet Reno was saying, it's all right, go ahead, boys. But it isn't all right. Those laws are there. And if she and the FCC enforced them, we would have an entirely different story.
Now, as far as the McCain-Feingold bill and the Shays-Meehan bills, which you support, go.
I did support those, and I still do, but I think they are only the tip of the iceberg. I really think that it might get rid of soft money, but I would greatly fear they'd find another loophole. I think that until campaign finance reform, entirely changing the way we run our elections today, is the only answer.
All right. On another issue, I was reading over a synopsis of your May 24th court date in D.C. Now, you were arrested and charged with demonstrating in the Capitol building. It's a little ironic, I think, that the exercise of free speech is an arrestable offense in the nation's capital. What were the charges really all about there?
Well, I knew that it would happen. I mean, we did it for that purpose. We knew that, in fact, we informed the police that we're going to do it. This is a branch of the Alliance for Democracy organization. I can't remember what we call ourselves, but I'm 90 years old, if you know. But we knew that we would be arrested because, number one, we spoke with force, and number two, we had banners with us, which we unfurled and that were saying no more corporate illegal money and so forth. And that is against the law, but our Constitution says that if you are unhappy with what is going on in the government, it is your civic duty to say so. And where better can you do it than in the People's Hall? Of course, what happened as far as I was concerned, when there were quite a few young people there, you know, tourists, and when they saw me, they began screaming, "Go, Granny, go! Go, Granny, go!" So that was certainly against the law. You're not supposed to be in the People's Hall and make a big noise to distress those people who are there looking at things in the hall. But the idea is this: if you want to keep your subject on the front burner, if you want to people being aware of what your problem is, then you must make demonstrations. If they're nonviolent, it seems a reasonable thing to do.
How have you enjoyed your newfound fame and celebrity?
How do I find being a celebrity?
Yeah.
Well, I separate myself from Granny D. Granny D is a person that must fight to stay in your face. And I sometimes put my hat and my vest away when it gets too bothersome, but I am told by my handlers that I must wear it so that people will know she's still there, she's still fighting for campaign finance reform, and so I wear it. But it's not easy. I talked with David Crosby, you know, Crosby, Stills, and
Nash, yeah.
Yeah, and he came and introduced me at the Shadow Convention in Los Angeles. He flew out from Washington to do so, and as a result of his being there, the place was mobbed. And I asked him, how do you handle being such a celebrity? He said, "Oh, I just don't pay any attention to it." And I said, "Well, I guess that's what I must do, because I'm beginning to have people come and ask for my autograph and give me a hug and so forth." But it's very kind, it's very gentle, but you must be very careful not to get a swelled head over it, because I'm sure that within a month when I stop, now that I've stopped walking, people will say, "Well, who is she?" You know?
As I've actually had, this is sad in my opinion, but I've had more people ask, "Who is she?" than say, "Oh, really, you're going to interview Granny D?"
Well, you know, I think one of the reasons that I get a great deal of emails saying that I'm their hero and that I have inspired them to walk again and so forth, that's a sort of serendipity, other than trying to educate people on campaign finance reform. But I think the common people recognize the fact that I'm a very simple old woman. I live on Social Security, and I was brave enough to go out there and walk. Now, I didn't do it by myself. Let's face it. I had thousands, hundreds of thousands of people walking with me, walking behind me, sending me money, taking care of me. I walked until given shelter, fasted until given food, and I never went without a meal or without a bed. People in this country are very kind and dear, and people in this country also are very worried about the way their government is going. And they said to me over and over again, "You're walking for me, Granny. You're talking for me."
Just a side question for you. How do you feel about the idea and the push to invest Social Security in the stock market?
Well, I really don't know much about stock market. My subject, my dear boy, is campaign finance reform, and I really can't answer questions about something I really know nothing about.
I'm terribly sorry.
That's all right. I do think that I did lose some money that I had in the stock market, and so now I have nothing. So I would have grave fears about giving up money, part of your Social Security, since I've been living on it since 1972, having to give it up in place of expectations. I think every morning when I get up, I say, "Thank God for Franklin Delano Roosevelt."
At the time that we're recording this, we still don't know if Bush or Gore has won.
We still don't know. I haven't turned the TV on today, but it's not settled yet, is it?
No.
I thought about 6 o'clock tonight.
That's what they're projecting, yeah. But they were also projecting 6 o'clock last night, so who knows when it's going to be.
Right.
And of course, I have I've conducted interviews with some prominent Democrats who've said they're going to sue and they're going to challenge on the basis of voter fraud if Bush does win. But my question for you was, as someone who was a very vocal supporter of the Nader-Leduc ticket, how will you respond if Bush gets in and you're told that Nader voters are the ones who put Bush into the White House?
I think so. I think perhaps that didn't help any. I thought that that was a lot of nonsense the way they were saying it, that that was just a come-on to vote for Gore. But I think maybe it did have something to do with it, and I think that it was, that NATO will continue to grow in the next 4 years. I don't know if it... He would be the one that will run, but I think that someone of his ilk will, because I think the people are now aroused enough to say, look, so many people did not want Bush, but now they're ending up with him, and you're going to have to live with that for 4 years. But you better do something during those 4 years so that next time we vote, we will be voting for the man we love, not for the man who could raise the most money. And both Gore and Bush were bought men. Let's face it, they both... I stood outside of a hall and while Bush was raising $21 million in one evening and bragged about it in the paper the next day. And 2 weeks later, I stood outside of another place where the Democrats raised $25 million that evening. And they bragged, look, we did better than you did. Well, that is not my idea. There is only so much money in this country. And if you spend it for that kind of thing, and you can go to bed at night knowing that 1 out of 5 children are to bed hungry,
yeah, I think there are definitely other uses that that money could have been put to. And probably the public funding will put a cap on it to an extent anyway, if it's successful. What are your plans for the future, Doris?
Well, I don't really have any. I have been invited to go down to Washington, D.C. to be on a show with Julia Butterfly Hill. Do you know who she is?
Yeah, she sat in a redwood for quite some time.
And she and I have done a radio program twice, once for Boston and once for San Francisco. I didn't see or hear her, but I shall be quite excited to go and see and hear her this time. And other than that, there's not much. Somebody is asking me to walk across New Mexico, but since I was not very successful having walked across Missouri, I'm wondering if they're just wasting their money getting me there. So the future is quite open. I will be having a book coming out in May, and I will be doing a book tour. But previous to that, I'm hoping very much to be able to do a tour through the colleges. It's not possible for you to come into a town where there is a college and ask to speak there. They must know in advance. I was able to do that in high schools and in grade schools. In fact, I was very popular at that stage, but not with the colleges because they're set up and then they're pretty rigid about letting anyone in unless there's an advance notice of maybe 3 months. I went and marched on the 2000, Unity 2000, and on several of the walks in the West. And I think the problem, with what happened up there in Washington State and in Washington, D.C., most of that was nonviolent, and there were only small incidences that occurred, but that is all that the media reported. Now, there was great work done in both places. There were meetings being held. People were learning about, and I went up when I was out west in Los Angeles for the Shadow Convention. I had gone up, up in the hills above Hollywood where they had what they call ruckus, where they were training young men and women, college age, for nonviolence. And I spent a day doing the exercises that they were doing, practicing. So, and what happened to that group? They arrived in Philadelphia, and they were arrested as they got off the buses. So they never had a chance to demonstrate in any way. And the person that drove my bus, my support car, for 6 months, a gentle, wonderful man, was there in Philadelphia, and he was helping in a warehouse build marionettes which were to be carried in the parade. And while there, he was arrested in the warehouse working on a papier-mâché model, and was arrested and landed in the jail for 2 weeks with one telephone call allowed and very, very little to eat. So then this is what the media reported. None of the rest of the stuff. And they didn't report this secret stuff that was happening to the kids, but they did report if somebody threw a stone or somebody, there was a group that in San Francisco, and I was right there. And they, at the end of the march, it was quite dark, and no one had eaten, and they were very tired, and they didn't know what to do with their signs. So they put them in a pile together and went and got sandwiches and made a bonfire out of them and sat around and had a supper. Now, they were criticized in the media as being violent because they did this.
For having a bonfire?
Yes. It was right in the middle of a huge, great big parking lot. There was no damage of any kind being done, but they used it as a bonfire to sit, of their steins, to sit around and eat their supper. They went and bought, I don't know what they ate, pizza, I guess.
Seems like that's often the case with the mainstream media. They would rather focus on the one rock thrower or even invent some news rather than a report on the real issues.
Of what was really happening, right.
Doris, I want to thank you for the time today and thank you for the interview.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Tell me your name again.
Rob Callahan.
Rob Palmer.
Callahan.
Okay, Solomon.
Close enough.
Solomon. Thank you very much.